and welcome to the MetaCall episode 204. I'm Corey, and John Cruzy is here today. John Hello. Praw, I should say. John Praw, John Cruzy, both.
Whatever. I do my art under the name John Praw, but you know, I don't know. You can call me whatever. It doesn't really matter to me. The fact is I'm here to talk about Magic the Gathering.
Most important.
After a long day of non-Magic the Gathering stuff, let's talk about Magic.
Yeah, man. I think a lot of us had a long day of non-Magic stuff, or maybe we're on our way to work to do non-Magic stuff. So, you know, it's a good way to start out the drive to the job, just listening to Magic banter on the podcast. I know I like to do that myself. I got a 30-minute commute, so there you have it. Hopefully, we can entertain you on the way if that's your pleasure.
Absolutely.
By the way, before we get started here, we are sponsored by ManaTraders.com, which is a fantastic way to rent paper Magic and digital cards. Use the promo code MODERNMEDICAL, all one word, no hyphens, 14% off your purchase at checkout, your subscription, I should say. Again, that's MODERNMEDICAL, all one word, no hyphens, for 14% off. All right, so we got some stuff to talk about. I'm happy to have John here because John is a fellow Arena player, which is something that I do and Daryl doesn't do. Daryl he's kind of hesitant to get involved in Arena because now he's like so far behind on it that it would just take a long time to like accumulate all of the stuff needed to play the formats.
It is a challenge. I have a friend who I used to play Magic with back in middle school and high school. Yeah. From my hometown, who I've just been sort of reconnecting with on Facebook recently. And he's been, I kind of got him into Arena because he was missing playing Magic with his brothers and stuff like that. And that is definitely a challenge. And I've certainly introduced a few folks, including a couple of my cousins, who just actually kind of bounced off of it because of that kind of, you know, just jumping into the play queues and getting stomped by meta decks when you don't have a collection.
Right.
Not particularly fun.
Yeah. Now, granted, they don't, you know, if you were to start when the program was first developed and you could do the free to play model and keep up pretty well. I have been playing free to play almost the entire time, and I've got a large collection of historic decks. I can build a lot of the standard decks. I'm pretty much fresh out of wild cards at this point. I've got a couple to spare, but I've built a lot of the decks that, you know, I would want at this point. I've got a lot of the like pieces to like the Omnath decks in standard, RIP. You know, but I'm pretty happy with the size of my collection at this point. However, if I were to start fresh, you know, I think it would be pretty daunting to try to accumulate all of that stuff. And I don't believe that WotC or Arena really does a very good job of welcoming new players with, you know, like some goodies to get them going. And I don't think a lot of games do. In fact, like I go back to Hearthstone now and then and I think, wow, this is a lot of fun. I remember the joy I had playing this game and all the wacky cards that there are to play, and look at all these cool cards that they developed in the meantime. But now I'm so far behind after taking, you know, like now like a couple of years off of that game that it's so hard to get caught up. So
It is easier if you are primarily a limited player.
Yeah.
Now it can be more expensive. I know I've certainly pumped more money into this game than you have, I think, because I just kind of jam a bunch of limited, but you know, I do have my ups and downs. Like I may have, you know, 6 whole months where I've got a format that clicks well for me and I just kind of go infinite on it. And then I'll have a format that I either kind of suck at or just don't enjoy for whatever reason. And then, you know, that's when my wild cards start to run dry and all that. But I will say having played since, one of the earlier, alphas, I think we both got in around the same time. I do have a pretty big collection, and for historic specifically, you know, that's kind of, you know, it's kind of our only extended kind of format in Arena. Yeah. So you just kind of, you know, there's with how stuff is pushed in certain ways. You know, there's also a lot of opportunities to just kind of take the most busted standard deck that you've already built up for standard, for example, and just, you know, juice that up for historic. So there's a lot of different ways you can kind of get into historic, but yeah, it is a pretty big time investment, I think, for most people. That's probably one of the bigger issues is just the amount of time and doing those activities to get your wild cards and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and I feel like I'm kind of forced to draft when a new set comes out, because it seems like the way that you can like really make your gems last. Like, you know, I could cash in and just buy a bunch of packs with my gems or gold, and then they're gone, right? But if I go through the process of drafting, then like I have that chance of like, you know, getting a positive win rate and then getting my money back and being able to draft again. But I really don't enjoy it. It is a chore to me. You know, like I go through the process of drafting and like sometimes I have a deck that's like mildly entertaining to me, but I do not enjoy limited. And it's just like I have to go through that grind and I just do it until I run out of gems and I get as many packs and standard legal cards or historic legal cards as I can. And I'm the type of player that when I'm playing limited, I'm picking those pathways. You know, I end up with like three or four of them sometimes because I just need to get those rare lands for my decks.
Mm-hmm.
So, which is a good way to do it because there's a lot of people that will pass on them because they're really not very useful. You know, a lot of people will pick playable uncommons over pathways in a lot of cases if they're competitive limited players. Now, granted, the better you do at limited, the harder it is to play. And if you end a season ranked highly, you end up, you know, placing highly in the next season too. You know, you don't drop as far in the next season. So your chances to do that become, you know, lesser or less and less. And so I'm finding that I ended my last limited season pretty high. I had a pretty good run. So I'm much less fruitful, on that front. And I think my cost benefit analysis is kind of trending towards I should just be buying packs.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing is you can just kind of, you know, realize your opinion about limited is wrong and it's really just one of the best ways to play and just kind of, you know, go that route. But no, I totally get it. You know, this is something you and I have, obviously we played Magic together for, or not obviously, but you and I have played Magic together for many years. So we've certainly had this conversation about limited versus modern or whatever it is we're into at the time. And yeah, it's just, you know, it's kind of a shame that, you know, I feel for me personally as a limited player and to be honest, somebody who, you know, I'm not buying as much paper Magic. So every once in a while, I don't mind, you know, dumping some gems into the program. You know, I feel like there's a great method for me to get my collection built up. It does take some time, but it's doing something I enjoy already.
Yeah.
Versus folks who have to just say, okay, I'm dumping $50 or $100 in boosters and oh yeah, I hope I get enough wild cards for this deck I really want to play. And then also hopefully WotC doesn't ban one of the cards and make half of my deck irrelevant or something like that, you know?
Right,
so
right.
There's a lot of issues there, certainly challenges.
Yeah. Well, one of the even though we disagree on limited, one of the common grounds we have on Arena is, well, Brawlin for one. If you want to check out some friendly competitive play, you can see our Brawlin series on the Card Knock Life website. But historic, and I love historic, and it really is one of my only routes to engage with the Eternal formats these days because the modern scene is pretty much dead. You know, like. I understand that you can play Moto, but Moto really just isn't an option for a lot of players these days. I used to go to my shop every Wednesday to play Modern, and I loved that, you know, just like the camaraderie of like playing with friends and seeing the same crowd every week and just, you know, being able to like chit chat with people and like play sleeve up some decks, have some fun. I miss that so much with the pandemic. But the alternative was Moto, and that was like a fine alternative for a while because I had the, you know, the flexibility to do what I loved, which was to, you know, kind of pivot and play a lot of different deck styles. Now, as I'm looking at Magic in the last couple of years, I've in spoiler alert, I'm working on an article right now where I'm looking at the pricing on the all of the standard legal modern playables right now, and I've put a spreadsheet out that includes every standard legal card that is a modern, like, quote-unquote playable or staple. Basically, any standard legal card that shows up in a current modern deck. And I've compared the price of the MTGO version to the paper version. And would you guess which of the two prices is more expensive? The paper copy of the card or the invisible digital object version of the card?
I feel like that's a leading question, but man, I gotta say the digital has to be
it is
worth nothing, right?
It is shockingly more expensive. So doing the math, so I've put them all together and I'm looking at like, it's like roughly like 100 cards or something that are in standard that are showing up in modern, and totaling them all up, the standard legal cards in modern decks are on average $80 more on MTGO overall, I should say, not on average, than their paper equivalents. And it's insane. Wow. It has to do with the fact that Arena is just like killing the standard market for MTGO. Like, players are not like drafting on Arena, or excuse me, on Modo. Players are not playing standard. There aren't packs being opened. So all of the cards, like take for example the Skyclave Apparition, which is like a hugely played modern card, is like just not available to players, and therefore you can get them in paper for like $5, but on Modo, $20 a copy. It's nuts. Wow. And it's like a staple of white decks. It's like the hotness in modern right now. Like, if you want to play a white deck or anything really interesting that is mid-range creature based in modern, like, you might be interested in some Skyclave Apparitions, but not at the tune of $80 for a play set of four digital cards, probably. I absolutely cannot justify trading any pieces of my collection for a card like that, that, you know, just might get just blasted into oblivion at some point in price, because, you know, just because the availability is so sketch right now.
Yeah, and also I'd be curious if people aren't opening packs and they're not playing standard, and it has this kind of ripple effect where your cards are costing a lot more money, are there people to play against at some point? You know, how easy is it to fire off an event? Or you know, I guess you're only you know, you kind of have the general pool of people you're matching against, right? Or I guess there's a couple different ways it works on MTGO.
Yeah, you can, I mean, you can do queues, right? So you can do paid queues where it's like average of $2 or two tickets for a game. Winner wins $3 or three tickets worth of play points, basically. And the loser takes like 50 cents back.
Okay.
And so that one like basically launches without fail. Like, I think it has to do with the fact that there are just lots of people that like to play modern, and this is really just the only way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are leagues, and leagues are the, you know, you play five games and you have to go three and two or better to get your money back. And I think largely those have been launching pretty well too. So I haven't experienced like any like delay in like pairings at this point, but I really haven't been, you know, interacting with Modo very much, because I guess the point I'm trying to make is Historic exists and it's way more accessible, and I have the opportunity to craft cards without having to trade $80 worth of my collection away for a play set of Skyclave Apparitions. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And I just wanted to, we don't have to dwell on this, but just as a side note on the modern availability, I kind of wonder if there will be a double whammy when, you know, when eventually we're able to play Magic in person again, if formats like Modern have kind of a second wave of all these cards are too expensive because not as much paper product was opened during the pandemic. So now that they're out of standard, you know, and people want to play that Skyclave Apparition, you know, I wonder if that goes from $5 in paper to, you know, $20 in paper or something like that. If, you know, I'm just kind of assuming if people aren't playing paper standard, they can't be selling as much paper Magic, you know? And I think some of the prices that we see in these standard products being as low as they are is partially because folks are trying to get fetch lands and, you know, those kind of chase cards. So that's kind of lowered the price of those other standard cards. And I kind of wonder if, you know, we get back in person, demand suddenly skyrockets for some of these cards and they just don't exist.
Well, yeah, the demand is certainly down for a lot of like the Eternal players, just because there's like not any opportunity to play like Modern, Legacy, Standard, and Paper. But I feel like there's the same, if not more, demand for Commander cards. And I don't really understand why. I think, you know, like people are still interacting with Paper Commander, either like via webcam games now, or, you know, just like getting together in person, you know, like with masks or whatever it is. But I don't think like interest in that format has really dwindled. And I think that WotC has really targeted those players. I think they realize that those are the players that are willing to really shell out for the singles. And, you know, those are the players that are buying the boxes, and those are the players that are buying the showcase and the foils and things like that to pimp out their decks. And so those are the players that they can still reach, especially with the paper cards, and not just during the pandemic, but just in general. I think those are, you know, those are the players that are likely to, you know, spend the money.
Yeah, and it's also worth noting with Commander, you're much more likely, I think, you know, I've kind of felt this myself, like, I think you're much more likely to justify, you know, maybe I'm not playing Commander in person with friends, but I'm going to grab these, like, seven cards I need from the set, and I only need one or two of any of them.
Yeah.
I think that can be part of it, too, and it's just, I think it's... You know, I think it's an easier format to do the webcam kind of magic with, because, you know, everybody has, you know, most people who play Magic have Commander decks, and it's just kind of, when you're over webcam, it's easier to do the more casual kind of formats when everything's blurry and you have to keep asking, hey, what's that card over there do? Yeah, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. You know, speaking of Commander, while we're on the topic, maybe we do segue into that one. I know we talked about doing that last, but there was a Commander leak from Commander Legends, and we're definitely going to talk about the Banner Restricted update on this podcast, but I don't want to, like, you know, dampen the mood with more negativity at this point. I don't know what to make of the leak. I mean, I guess it's kind of a downer that someone, like, decided to just, like, post a bunch of pictures of stolen cards on the internet. But it is exciting that there are cards in this new set coming out that are interesting to people.
Yeah, you know, I kind of go back and forth on the leaked card kind of thing, because on the one hand, yeah, it really sucks if you're particularly a smaller content creator or streamer and you get this opportunity to premiere a card, and, you know, maybe you'll drive a couple hundred more people to your stream or you know, whatever it may be. Yeah. Or even just having that opportunity to work with this company when you know, use their products for your content.
Yeah.
So that does kind of suck. But on the other hand, this happens to Wizards like every other set, and it's really difficult for me to have any kind of sympathy for them if they can't not leak all this stuff. Like, we don't really know what happened with these cards, I don't think, or how they got out. We've had a couple cases, like maybe one or two in the past, where they've commented somebody stole these and we're doing, you know, whatever. I think that one big, I forget what set, but there was one where like a whole sheet leaked, somebody took a picture of it, and that one was somebody actually stole something. But, you know, when they're leaking these, or, you know, they can't, like, if you look at the pictures, it looks like this guy got a pallet of product.
Oh yeah, like, he's got a ton.
Like, this doesn't look like it's stolen. It looks like somebody just, like, maybe delivered something before they were supposed to. But anyway, you know, it's also mostly a reprint set anyway.
Yeah. However, there are some pretty big spoilers that this guy is getting ahead of, that I expect that WotC would have liked to control the spoiling of. These two planeswalkers look like they are likely like the box toppers, just based on the fact that he's got these like stacks of these two full art partner planeswalkers.
The box toppers are usually like in a sealed, like, individual sealed things though.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, they're in a little booster pack of their own, which is a little, it's really weird that he just has like a stack of these. Yeah. Maybe this was something that was going to go out to stores or something. I don't know. It doesn't have a promo marking on it though. I don't think looks like it's a normal set number.
There is going to be a pre-release for this one. So maybe it's a pre-release promo.
So, perhaps. Yeah.
I don't know. Anyways, so what we're getting at, there's a picture of a bunch of German cards. We can talk about.
Oh,
the
he just
notables.
Cracked these. I'm sorry, I just realized he just has the stack of the ones he cracked, I think. Sorry, because this is all open product.
Yeah, yeah.
Gotcha. Sorry about that, but yeah, there are German cards. I believe they were printed in Texas, according to folks on Reddit, and this person was in Texas.
Why does that matter?
I don't know. I think it's just people people guessing where it came from, I guess.
Okay.
Well, I guess that was part of validating that they're not fake. Is that, right. Yes, this person could have been where they came from. But anyway.
All right, well, let's just talk about the stuff that really matters. There's a lot of them that are blurry that you can't really tell what's happening. There are a lot of commons that are really, like, kind of superfluous. But there are a couple of rares and mythics that are worth talking about. The first one that I'm seeing here that I think is a notable reprint is Staff of Domination, which is a pretty pricey artifact.
That is a classic commander staple.
Yeah,
it just big, like goes infinite with everything, right?
Yeah, big combo piece. It's just a mana sink. You know, it can go infinite. When you have infinite mana, it's just an ability, or it gives you an ability to just do infinite damage, or or whatever it may be, because it can untap itself. It can deal damage. It can deal damage. That's one of its modes. But basically, it's just an artifact that has a bunch of different functional modes as activated abilities. I would anticipate that if this is a rare, that would bring this price way down, just to a couple of bucks. Because this one is up there. I think it was like, what is it? It was like $20+. I mean, it's huge. It's just,
yeah, I'm pretty sure it's never been reprinted.
So,
yeah, I think that's it.
I'm looking at them. There's like some for $40 online. There was a masterpiece of it.
Okay.
So there's that. There's also Timna. Timna is the white-black partner. Timna the Weaver. That was another one that was quite expensive. I think she was like $40+. She's the one that has lifelink at the beginning of your post-combat main phase. You may pay X life, for X is the number of opponents that were dealt combat damage this turn, if you do draw X cards. I hope that this means that we're getting more of the partner reprints in this set. I think we kind of talked about that previously.
Oh, yeah, we're going to have a bunch of partner.
Because the new partners were shown in the initial spoilers for this set, I think that a lot of people hypothesized that the old partners from the original Commander, from Commander 2016, were also going to be coming back, because they're like due for a reprint. Like Timna was very expensive, but she wasn't the only one.
I could see them doing some of the other set that had the partner commanders. It had Will and Kenrith.
Like Battle Bond.
Yeah, Battle Bond. Battle Bond had the partner with, like, we could see maybe Toothy and Pyr.
That could be. Those are confusing because they work differently, though. So I'm not sure. That would be kind of tough to handle all that in one set.
Well, and the purpose for the reason they have partner in this set is because it is supposed to be a drafted commander product.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of the only way to make sure everybody can have a playable deck, I guess, is if you just make sure that there are a ton of these partner commanders, which I'm pretty firmly against partner commanders. I really think they are, I just think it's dumb. I think it's dumb to give, you know, half the players at the table get an extra commander. And some of these, I think they are really taking advantage of the fact that they are partner. Do you want to talk about the two new ones that we've seen so far? I've got the translations here if you'd like me to read them.
The Planeswalkers or what?
Yeah, the partner Planeswalker commanders.
Can they partner with creatures?
Yeah, I believe so.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, go ahead and why don't you read those off?
Yeah, so these are the ones that you were commenting on, the special border or the extended art kind of look. So we've got two of them. One is Tevish Zot. Sazat, I don't know how to pronounce that exactly, but kind of an older, one of those older Magic characters.
Subject to change with the proper Tevish, English version, right?
Yes. Yeah, these are translations from random people on Reddit. So Tevish Zot can be your commander. It is a 5 mana, I think. Sorry, this one doesn't have the
4 and a
the
black.
Prices on it. Yeah, 4 black. 4 black Planeswalker. +2, you create 2 black 01 Thrall tokens. +1, sacrifice a creature or another Planeswalker, draw 2 cards. Draw an extra card if that creature was a commander. So there you go. I guess the third ability here, the ultimate, oh my gosh. How much does this guy come in with?
4.
4, okay, so -10. So you gotta create 6 Thralls, I guess. Gain control of all commanders in play and put all commanders from all command zones into play under your control.
Yeah.
You just get every commander. So the first things first, if your opponent has this commander, I believe they are probably a target right away.
Yeah.
Because I think blowing up people's lands and stealing their permanents are like two of the most infuriating things for a lot of casual players. Mm-hmm. I think just players in general don't like their stuff getting stolen. That is a crazy, crazy ultimate.
Yeah, not to mention plus one sack a creature, draw a card is very powerful as a plus one.
Draw two, well, maybe three.
Yeah, draw two if it's a... Oh, draw two.
You draw two, God, you draw yeah, an draw X. Two. You draw a third if it was a commander.
Yeah, that's incredibly powerful. So, like, decks are always hungry for sacrifice outlets. If this is the commander that lets you do it, it's like... I mean, we've seen Korvald do some nasty things. This guy is nuts.
Well, you know what's going to happen is you're going to play against this commander. Mm-hmm. Your opponent's going to obviously want to steal everything,
yeah,
right? Because they have a big incentive to sacrifice your creature. So because this guy can be your commander, they're just, you know, they can play it early in the game, maybe steal something through some other method. And later in the game, you just have it dangling over your head that they can, you know, if they've got somebody's commander, they can slam this thing down and just plus one to draw three cards.
Yeah.
That is kind of nuts. But I will say, you know, if the plus one is draw two cards regardless, huh? Yeah, that's busted. I mean, it doesn't technically kill anything, but I'm sure that player that everybody knows who has the five color Planeswalker Super Friends deck that always gets doubling season out is going to love this.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, because you can gain control of all their dudes on the next turn and then still have two counters mm-hmm. left on this guy after it.
Yeah. Well, I say you bring this guy back to play with your Elspeth Conqueror's Death, so it has plus one.
Oh, so it has
loyalty. There, yeah, then you could do it right away. Okay. Jump through all those hoops, you get all the commanders. Okay, so the other one, and can you tell me again, so this is Rayav or something like that, Master Blacksmith. Oh, it's red-white.
I'm not looking at the same thing as you then. Are you looking at...
Oh, wait, this is a creature. Sorry.
Yeah, so the
okay,
other Planeswalker is Jeska Didrimal Vigerborn-y.
I don't know what that one does, but it has a static effect.
Yeah, it's two and a red. It's only three mana. You don't have that one?
No, I thought I had both, shit. but the other... Let me see real quick if I can find it here.
Yeah, that one I looked at earlier today. I can't remember. I think it's just damage, but Jeska.
Okay, Jeska. Jeska enters the battlefield with a loyalty counter for each time you've cast your commander from the command. For each time you cast, I'm sure it says a commander from the command zone this game. Zero, choose a creature. If that creature deals combat damage to an opponent, all right, wow, this translation is really bad. Sorry. So for zero, you choose a creature, and until end of turn, if that creature deals combat damage to an opponent, it deals three times that damage instead.
Wow.
So just for zero.
Yeah.
Minus X. Jeska deals X damage to up to three targets.
Yeah. And it, so how it much has, does this it thing has cost? Zero, it has zero loyalty to begin with. And then
who cares? You know, it has two for sure. It's going to have two for sure, right? Or one for sure?
One for sure, yeah. It costs two and a red. But it has no plus abilities. So basically what you can do is, like, when you first play it, you're just going to be doing the zero ability over and over until it dies. And then
how unfortunate. You have to triple the damage of one of your creatures for three mana and then every turn after that for free.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a good card.
That's wow. So, and anyway, those are both partners. So I'm sure there's something busted that both of them can go with that just, like, you know, maybe there's some two mana partner that you could play with Jeska so that it always starts at two or
yeah,
something.
In fact, I'd imagine that all five colors gets one of these, like legendary, like mythic, I should say, Planeswalkers mm-hmm. that partner. So, you know, stay tuned for the green one, right?
Yeah. Now, can we talk about something I can't believe you haven't brought up, but can we talk about that extended art Fleshbag Marauder?
Okay, it's cool. I'm excited for that. I'm excited for
I love
Marauder.
People hate that art.
The extended art Boros Charm is cool. Uh-huh. Just the fact that there's extended art on all these old staples is really exciting because, you know, that makes it seem like we're going to get some opportunities for some really old cards that have never been in these new frames to have this kind of art. Mm-hmm. So that's sweet. Like, could you imagine, like, a Wayfaring Bauble reprint in this set with the extended art? Like, we've already seen, like, Sol Ring type of things. Like, I think that could be really neat to like have some fresh takes on those old styles.
And then when we get to Time Spiral 2, they can give us Command Tower with the old border.
Yeah,
then everything will be complete.
Cool. Yes.
They also have the split second. I just want to mention this one. They have that split second 2WW artifact and enchantment removal card.
Yep.
I know that's an enchantment that gets played in a ton of decks instant that gets played in a ton of decks. And I know it is, one of those uncommons. It just kind of always slowly climbs up. So that's awesome to see that one too.
Turn to dust. It doesn't have split second, but it does say when you play it during your main phase, you can get two artifacts.
Oh, that's right. It's from that side. Enchantment. Yeah.
Otherwise you just get one.
Yeah. Split second is the green one.
Yeah.
I forgot.
Crossing grip. Yeah. There is some disappointment in this in the, there's a red enchantment. I can't remember the name of it cause it's in German, but it's like a pirate cannon thing. It's like one in a red where you sack creatures and deal damage from Ixalan. And that seems to signal to me that we're not getting like Goblin Bombardment, which is a card that could really use a reprint.
We are getting three visits though.
Yes, there is that.
That's
three
big.
Visits.
That's the
deal.
Maybe
deal.
The first reprint of that one too.
Yeah, I mean, that card's like $100.
Yeah,
simply
for,
just look for a forest, right? Just put a forest in there. But
yeah, but it's from Portal, so
yeah, new art.
But I'm all for that. I love the Portal stuff. I loved the Portal stuff when I was a kid, when I could barely get my hands on any of it. I always thought it was so neat. Like, look at these cards; they have different ways of playing cards as interrupts. Look at these sorceries that you can only play on combat on your opponent's turn or whatever.
Yeah. So anyways, I'm pretty sure this is real. I don't think there's any doubt that it isn't.
Yeah, no one's
faking the time to talk about it. But
yeah, and the other thing I'll mention about this that we didn't touch on, they do show the new special etched foil cards. Which that's kind of another way we know this is real, because those have been, I think, announced in some capacity. But yeah, those are like the Timna and Zedru and Nekusar and stuff like that. Those are classic commanders are reprinting with a special etched foil.
Oh yeah, and speaking of Maelstrom Wanderer, I think is one of those too, and that's another reprint that's worth noting.
So. Yeah.
All right, cool. So I think we should move on from this onto the banned and restricted update.
Yeah. Did they ban any cards this week? It's hard to keep track.
Yeah, right. So, I mean, it's no surprise. I'm sure if anyone's listening to this podcast, they're aware of the banned and restricted update. But if we could just... John, do you have it pulled up?
I do, yeah.
You want to just kind of go on the list of what's been changed here today?
So Omnath is on its way to join Oko in the... delete it from the game pile. So Omnath, so in standard we got Omnath, Locus of Creation, Lucky Clover, and Escape to the Wild banned. In historic we had Omnath, Locus of Creation, and then two cards that were previously suspended. So for folks who don't follow historic, they do this thing where they basically temporarily ban something, and then a couple months later or a month later they say, okay, yeah, it's banned for real now, or uh-oh, we made a mistake, we'll let you play with this card again. So so anyway, Teferi and Wilderness Reclamation were on the suspended list. They've been moved to banned forever. Get the heck out of here, Teferi, no one needs you. And then Burning Tree Emissary was unsuspended, so you can now play with that card again. And then finally in Brawl, Omnath also got the axe, because apparently people like playing against more than just one deck, which is Omnath.
Yeah. So that card...
in every format.
That card just doesn't exist now. I mean, it gets played in Modern. So there's that. You can play Modern Omnath, but there will be a day soon where we'll be whining about that, and I'm sure it'll follow the same fate as Oko.
I mean, it just does too much. Yeah. It does too much. It has no downside. A card that costs four different colored mana pips has no downside. Consider that statement in 2020.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I posted this a while back, but this was the there's a picture on our Facebook page. If you don't follow us, please do. We love the support, of course. You can find Card Knock Life on Facebook. But someone had this on Reddit, and I thought I'd share it because this is just ludicrous to me. The standard that was intended at this point in time, assuming that there are no bans, would include a green deck involving Gilded Goose, Once Upon a Time, Oko, Uro, Azusa, Ugin, Kinnan Border Prodigy, Omnath, and Lotus Cobra all at once. Could you imagine? It's like, was there a time where we were thinking green just wasn't good enough, and so we needed to like really print some good stuff for the color to play some big fatty creatures right away so that they can do some catch up.
I don't think it's that green was underpowered. Here's my thought on the situation. When you take take Magic cards and you basically just say we want to make these more powerful. How are we going to do it? And you decide we're going to take away the downside.
Yeah.
Most of what they've done for a lot of these really broken cards is, you can just look at the card, and if you've played Magic for more than a couple of years, you can look at that card and say, if I were looking at this as a fan card, here's what I would do to make it look more like a Magic card. And almost always that is to put some kind of drawback.
Mm-hmm.
We're in a place now where like a common black card can deal with enchantments with a very small downside of losing life. Mm-hmm. That would have been, pretty surprised. That's like something a lot of people have a problem with, breaking the color pie in that regard. Yeah. But that would have been something that I think people would have really been upset about, maybe 5 years ago.
Yeah.
It's like, this is Withering busted. Boom. Why can black do this?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so anyway, when you look at these cards, it's like Omnath draws you a card. What's a problem with creatures? Oh, if it doesn't do something when it enters the battlefield, no one can play it or fewer people will play it because you got to wait until the next turn for it to do something. Okay, we'll make it draw a card, and we're going to make it trivial for you to trigger all these other ridiculous things, including give you mana. So in most cases, when you played that card, anybody who watched any Magic, which is not many people on Twitch recently because of this, you'll see that it's just a card with no downside because it costs you no mana. Essentially, you get all your mana back, you gain life, you deal damage to your opponents, you draw a card. It's just like no reason not to, it basically just tells you, here is your deck. Okay. You take this busted card, you find ways to do all these things that it says, and here is your deck. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think that, to kind of get to my point about this, when you remove the drawbacks, and then when you also reduce the mana cost, it is ridiculous to see just how many abilities are on cards for 3 or 4 mana these days. I kind of thought sagas were a little bit too much with 3 little discrete abilities or whatever. And now we've got these cards that just have so much text, you can't remember all of it sometimes. But anyway, when you reduce the mana cost, when you remove the drawbacks, it doesn't scale identically with every type of effect in the game. And one of the core design aspects of Magic is you have these different colors, and the different colors can do different things. If those things don't scale identically, I think you end up with a really unbalanced situation, or these situations where, look at Ramp. I think a lot of people have made this comment. Ramp used to be a strategy where the drawback was a lot of times, or not a lot of times, but sometimes you're going to end up with all of your mana dorks and no payoff.
Right.
Or you're going to get your payoff and they're going to be able to deal with that, and then you're left with nothing. Or maybe you just get payoffs. You have a hand of 6 mana cards and you don't get any of your ramp or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
The cards just kind of do all of that stuff. Let's just give you a 2 mana instant that lets you draw a card and put a land onto the battlefield. Like, you don't even need to worry. We'll let you draw a card to replace this card. If you don't have a land, you could probably draw into it with it. Like, all of the ramp that they've put out just kind of gets rid of those drawbacks. And I think you add on to it the fact that part of a green's color identity is we've got the big beefy creatures. So, okay, if green always has the biggest creatures and you reduce the mana cost of everything by 1 or something like that to increase the power, well, green's power scales up further than the other colors, I think. So I think it's kind of this combination of, just reducing any kind of drawbacks and increasing the numbers on cards or decreasing certain other numbers in a way that's just not, you know, you have the system that worked fine for 20 some years or whatever. You're kind of making just kind of too rapid of a change to those things, I think. And I think that's why we run into these instances where you just have like 5 or 6 cards in a set that just spike way higher than everything else.
Yeah.
And they happen to be green.
Yeah. And I mean, white is like just getting stomped out of the, you know, the standard and historic format has very low representation from white. And it's just like, I think it goes to show that the like low to the ground aggressive strategies just can't be fast enough now to deal with the decks that are ramping.
Unless you have Embercleave.
Plus you have Embercleave, so why play white?
Then you just get to win against any deck when they, well, whatever. They don't block anyway. Never mind.
But when you're like, you know, you used to like play the, you know, the mind games of like, well, if my opponent is going big, like I just go underneath them, right? But you can't go underneath them because the ramp is just so efficient these days. But
yeah, yes. And I also think some of these strategies are like I think they can make a lot of potential improvements if they, you know, not necessarily completely break the color pie, like letting black deal with enchantments, but revisit what the core strategies are within that. So for example, one of the themes that Wizards really seems to want to make work in historic particularly, and they come back to this in standard a lot, is okay, one of white's color identities is gaining life. How do we just make you gain dumb amounts of life? And because gaining life in general has traditionally not been a good strategy. I mean, compare Healing Solve to you know, anything else in that Lightning cycle, Bolt, to be honest. Yeah. Lightning Bolt or,
but you can prevent the damage too,
draw three cards or whatever. Yeah.
It's modal.
yeah. But I mean, I think what I'm getting at is like the white decks that are just like, okay, I'm gonna gain a billion life and put all these counters on these three different identical creatures that just say you get a +1/+1 counter every time you gain life. It just, to me, it's kind of a boring strategy too. You know, it's just like, okay, instead of my strategy being I dump a lot of weenies and I deal damage to you quickly, I'm gonna gain life quickly and then hopefully find a way to finish you off or something. And I think kind of like, you know, trying to make mill work in blue, I think has been kind of boring too. Like let's pretend that Magic is a game with deck damage for one player. I think that's just boring. So I think that they can go back to the drawing board a little bit in what kinds of strategies they push. You know, like what kinds of things about white creatures can we really lean into and make them very powerful? Because if I think back to you know, standard when we had what's the two white that makes you a couple knights and then pumps them up?
Two white?
Yeah, the saga.
Two white. Oh,
or one white. One white. White. Yeah.
History of Benalia.
Yeah, History of Benalia. So that to me feels like a very white kind of card and a white strategy that I think can compete in the right kind of environment that isn't, you know, it's not boring, but it doesn't feel like we're just trying to say, okay, white's identity is we gain life, so we've got to find a way to make that the strategy. So anyway, I think it's just sort of a combination of all of those things that have kind of, I don't know, they just kind of cause damage to certain, what's the word I'm looking for? You know, I think they've kind of limited the directions folks can go in historic, and we have such a big card pool now.
Yeah.
That I'd like to see some of those other strategies kind of open up.
Is it losing its identity a little bit? Because like, you know, every color is capable of doing so much more than it used to be. And you're talking about like the black spells that can deal with enchantments now, you know, like, and even white has like, all of a sudden it can do card draw. Like you no longer have to like, you know, go into other colors to access those things because like, you know, there's just like the color pie has been kind of like broken and spread out. But it seems like if you're into green, let's see, green, blue, and black, Sultai seems to just about cover everything that you'd want to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's got card draw, it's got ramp, it's got removal, it's got counter spells, it's got permanent destruction, like, it's got graveyard hate. There's really nothing that's missing from Sultai. And so, like, all of these decks that we're seeing, these big ramp decks, it's like, not only can they accelerate their mana, which is really the obviously the most powerful strategy in the game we're learning, right? Because if you've got the resources to do things, then you can play the big flashy spells that are, like, obviously the most powerful ones because they cost the most mana for a reason. But then you've also got access to all of the things that let you catch up. And if you've got, you know, the, you know, you can take 10, 12 damage, you can go down to 2, 3, 4 life. If you can play something like Ugin, you know, on the top end, and just, like, in one single card, just sweep up the entire board and say, oh, yeah, it doesn't really matter that I'm, like, almost dead, because now this one thing, like, all of the other, like, chaff that I've put into my deck that just puts lands in play, chaff, quote-unquote, you know, just leads to this one card that, like, can just take care of all the business I need to do. So it doesn't take a lot of thinking. It's just, like, you know, like, there's this one thing that just does everything. And why not include that?
That is the one thing that I really don't like about Historic at times is, like, you know, I think there are people who they'll kind of complain about people complaining about cards like Muxus, for example. Like, yes, Goblins is a very beatable deck, but that doesn't mean Muxus is fun to play against.
Oh, yeah.
It's not fun for my opponent to turn three, all of a sudden have, you know, whatever, 27 power on the board from one spell they cast. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, later in the game, after I've wiped everything, it's just like, okay, they got Goblin Matrons on two of their Muxuses that they cast, and that got them another Muxus. And it's just like, you can never deal with all of them. That is a pretty common complaint right now, is that removal against most creatures and all these kinds of things that just do everything doesn't really pay off. It's you're kind of incentivized to just goldfish and win in one against your opponent, because, you know, why blow up a Muxus if it got them five other creatures, you know. But those kind of cards that just, like, one card and suddenly the board is completely full of stuff, like I cast my ultimatum or whatever, like, to me, this is one of the most mind-blowing things about current Magic, as somebody who's played for a long time, and I think a lot of people probably have noticed this as well. Like, it is almost trivial in a lot of cases to cast these cards that are just, like, all colored mana pips, like the ultimatums.
Yep.
Like, you build your decks with an ultimatum in mind, you're gonna cast that dang thing. Like, yeah, it's gonna be stranded sometimes, but anyway, there's just a lot of those cards like that, and you know, Collected Company to a lesser degree, Muxus, you know, just all these things that just kind of refill the board almost immediately. Those kinds of things I'm not a huge fan of in Historic, but, you know, in general, I do like the variety. But I was just kind of looking, you know, as you're talking about white specifically, because I think in general, white is usually the weakest color in almost every format, right?
Yeah, it's the redheaded stepchild.
Yeah, so
it's one of
looking
the best
at the
modern right now, though.
Okay, but, well, I'm looking at the Historic metagame because I was just curious, what are people playing that is white? And I'm looking at, this is the Goldfish metagame, so I don't know where they get this data from exactly. Oh, so from different, it looks like tournaments or something. But anyway, I see two decks with white on here, and they're Azurius Control and Esper Control.
Yeah. Soul Sisters comes up every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
There is a mono white Hate Bears deck, though. I don't know if you've seen that much, but that deck exists.
Yeah, and I do think you see the mono white life gain, like the Soul Sisters kind of decks. I think you see those a lot in Best of One.
Yeah.
On Arena, where it's a lot less likely that your opponent has some way to hose it, I guess.
Yeah, and there's Spirits too. Spirits is a deck, either blue white or Bant, but
or blue white flyers just in general.
Yeah.
With the different, you know, pump all your flyers kind of effects out there.
But not huge representation. Overall, though, I think Historic is really, like, pretty diverse. I'm impressed with the format. And I think that, like, the diversity it represents, like, not only does it have a lot of decks, it has a lot of different kinds of decks. Like, I'm looking at, like, the Pioneer metagame, and even after, like, a few bans, like, it's pretty miserable. Like, Orzhov Aura is, like, I don't really enjoy playing against that. I don't think anyone does. Lotus Combo, like, come on. Wilderness Reclamation, Jeskai Luka, like, I do not want to be a part of that metagame, right? But I can handle playing games against, like, like burn decks and Rakdos Arcanist decks. Like those decks are cool, you know. Goblins like can be frustrating, but it is beatable. I know that it sucks when they get the Muxus flips and like just, you know, off the top of their deck they get the right combination of goblins that means that they can just, you know, Cranko into a bunch of dudes and kill you. But you can keep them off of their Muxus. And I tell you what, Grafdigger's Cage is a hell of a card in this format. Not only does it stop goblins, it's really good against Rakdos Arcanist. They cannot beat that card. They have the black red or red black, whatever that instant speed 3-mana destroy artifact creature or planeswalker spell is, but they only have like two of those usually. And
that deck plays like probably the most popular white card right now. How do we not give this a shout out?
Which one? Rakdos
Arcanist? Lurrus of the Dream Den.
Oh yeah. Yes.
Does that right. play that one plays that right?
Yeah, oh, yeah, definitely.
Or a lot of those Rakdos decks do.
Yeah.
Yeah, there we go. White has plenty of good cards. It has Lurrus.
Yeah, it has a singleton.
Yeah, you know, I think the other thing I want to mention about historic specifically, you know, we're kind of bouncing around a little bit, but these are all like kind of intertwined topics, banned and restricted and historic and all that. But I think one of the things that annoys me about the Goblins deck is the deck was basically just like designed for historic and sold to people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like we got half the cards in an anthology and then Muxus and a couple others in Jumpstart. And it was like all of that stuff was specifically for historic. I mean, I guess Muxus is kind of a commander card too, but it, you know, that's one of those ones. It's like Sultai Midrange, the Jund Sacrifice decks. Those are really kind of like, we're building this strategy around all these cards from these different sets, or maybe mostly the brand new standard sets, but the Goblins one just feels a little weird. Cause it's like, here you go here for me. Like I understand obviously from one standpoint, Wizards has to print cards that are synergistic and work well together. Otherwise, what are they doing? Like we don't just want random cards, but I always find it more interesting when, you know, like here is a strategy we've built with this massive card pool, and not here is the deck WotC wants to be popular in this format or strong in this format. You know what I mean? And that does get to one of the potential weaknesses with historic. And that is just that they pump so many cards into the format. Basically any month we don't get a standard set released, we get some other product on Arena into historic. Yeah. So we're starting to get the remastered sets, which we're probably going to get every couple months here. We've got Kaladesh Remastered coming up, which depending on what they choose to put in that set could dramatically shake up historic. And so that is kind of a one of the problems. Like, yeah, it's unlikely if you build a, you know, Goblins or Sacrifice or something like that, it's unlikely that deck is just going to be dead overnight. But, you know, we just have these dramatic shifts really quickly in that format, and who knows if that's just going to be always the way it is or if it'll settle down at some point. But
Smuggler's Copter get promptly banned?
Oh, just don't even start with that card. don't even mention it.
Oh man, you know, remember how long that one lasted in standard? I mean, I think it's possible that like that card is just too like ubiquitous for like the like mono black decks. I think are gonna love Smuggler's Copter and historic. Like, does Goblins play it? I don't know. You know,
no, Goblins, I don't think Goblins would play it just because Goblins really wants to be able to sacrifice all the creatures for mana. And also you can't flip it, so that's another dead card off Muxus. So I think that one gets a no. Also you can't get it with the little sneaky spy boy that lets you play the top card of your library if it's a goblin.
Snoop. Soul Sisters maybe, or like the mono white Hate Bears deck will be in it.
Any of the token decks?
I mean, the mono black deck for sure wants it. Anything that like puts stuff in the graveyard. There's like the mono black gift decks. I think they're interested.
Yeah, I mean, you just slot it into the one that plays the 1/1 life linker, that the cleric that becomes a 5/5 if you reanimate it.
Yeah,
like that's a no brainer because that deck plays usually a one drop, almost always. Then next turn you can just play the copter, and then from, you know, that point you're just discarding whatever. You don't even have to wait for your opponent to kill your 1/1 or use village rights to sacrifice it. So I think that's a, you know, potentially a pretty big add to that deck. So yeah, please don't give us Smuggler's Copter.
Oh, it's finding it. It's definitely coming. How could they print Kaladesh without giving Smuggler's Copter?
I don't know. They just don't put it in there. You know, I mean, it's Kaladesh remastered.
Yeah.
So if for anybody who's not familiar with the last remastered set, which was Amonkhet remastered, they took two sets, smushed them together, and then threw a historic anthology in there, just stuffed the extra cards in there. We're gonna get that too. So they'll probably just give us Moxen or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I'm sure they will do that again, and I'm wondering what they're going to include this time, because it seems like the hit on a lot of the I'm not sure how to describe them, but the cards that they included were like Wrath of God, Anger of Gods, like just kind of like the more like, what's the word for this, like they're just like these overarching like removal, like just kind of like iconic spells.
Yeah, like for, like kind of iconic staples.
Yeah, like it's nothing like too specific, like nothing had like keyword mechanics on it. It was just like stuff that was just like the like kind of hallmark of like removal, basically. You know, like red removal, what do you think of? Anger of the Gods, white, Wrath of God. Like, now I'm just like blanking on what some of the other ones were, but like a lot of them, like, oh, Pact of Negation, like free counterspell, that kind of stuff. So I'm wondering,
yeah, some of them were invocations. Yeah, some of them were invocations from Kaladesh or whatever those were called. Or not Kaladesh, Amonkhet. But yeah, some of them were just kind of like, yeah, well, let's give you another sweeper or something like that. So I guess I'd be curious, is there anything you want to see them add? Like if you had to pick a couple things or guess?
Yeah, I want Tireless Tracker so bad because I want to play Value Town, but I don't, like, I think that one's got keywords on it, so it's unlikely that it's going to be included. But everything else is there for Value Town. I've been trying to, like, I sometimes I forget that Knight of the Reliquary is legal in this format, but I want so badly to play that card, and I'm trying to figure out how to do it.
Yeah, I wouldn't put it past them to put different keyword abilities on there, because remember we have like one card with affinity for artifacts.
Yeah.
And there's a couple other things like that, and I don't know if we're getting Time Spiral 2 on Arena or if that's just going to be a paper product. I forget what they said, but I don't know. It's Kaladesh. Just give us like the artifact lands.
Oh God, please no.
Give us Arcbound Ravager, please. For the love of God, give us Arcbound Ravager. Yeah, Goblin Welder. Give us Cranial Plating. just give us all of the Skull Clamp. That's what I want. I want Skull Clamp in Historic. Oh, that'd be so busted. It would be so busted. Just throw it in that same deck we were just talking about throwing
That would be
Okay.
That would be so obviously busted, but I wouldn't put it past WotC. It would be like so 2020 for them to just, you know, finish off the year with that kind of move, you know.
I want them to give us like more stuff for the old people.
Yeah.
Like, you know, give me Jite. give me that. Give me give me Darksteel Colossus.
Oh God. Yeah, that would be fine. You know?
That's like, something really that's like Tinker. We've got Ulamog, we've got all kinds of like stuff that's way worse, but that would be a fun card to play with. And you know, like you could throw it in there's this deck I've been playing in Historic recently. It's not the best deck, it's kind of a meme, but it's that Tron. Yeah, the Forsaken Monument deck.
Mm-hmm.
It would be fun to throw like a one of in there or something like that. But yeah, I could see some fun stuff like that. But anyway, to get back to the the bands, what got us started on this.
Yeah.
I do think Historic is going to be a lot better with Omnath gone. I know that you mentioned you hadn't seen much of it, but towards the end of my time playing Historic, before I kind of gave up on Omnath formats, I started seeing quite a lot in Historic, so I'm glad they kind of waited or got rid of it now before it got even worse potentially.
Yeah, I really haven't.
And we'll see what happens.
Yeah. I played a lot of Historic.
I saw too. Quite a lot of it, but sorry, go ahead.
I said I played a lot of Historic. And I just haven't seen much Omnath. Just a lot of different decks out there.
Yeah, can I ask? Are you typically playing in best of one or best of three?
Best of one. So yeah. Maybe that has something to do with it.
Yeah, I think it also kind of depends on maybe what you're playing. I don't know if there's Like I know that they do some kind of like power-based matchmaking with like Brawl, for example. They mentioned in this banned and restricted announcement, Omnath is banned in Brawl. He's still allowed in Historic Brawl, but with the caveat that basically you're going to get paired against other people playing busted decks with Omnaths if you play Omnath. So they won't like put you in with the plebs who aren't playing Omnath. So I wonder if they do some of that kind of stuff to try and I don't know, control your matchups in the ladder. I'm not quite sure, but anyway, I do think Historic will be better without it. And Standard was just a graveyard, an Omnath graveyard.
I haven't,
you know,
really,
if we were talking about the grand finals,
I haven't played any Standard. You know, I've just been hearing horror stories about it, but I was anxious to get the Rogues deck out. So I'm looking forward to it. You know, and I just stopped into Standard recently since the ban, and like, it looks like there's a lot of cool stuff going on aside from Omnath. So it'll be interesting to see like what happens, but I am nervous that Embercleave is just like the thing to do now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I definitely think Gruul is going to be one of the best decks, because of Embercleave and just, you know, how many really strong 2 and 3 drops that deck has. But yeah, just touching on the grand finals a bit, as soon as, you know, I was kind of messaging you a little bit as I kind of poked in, as the tournament went on, and, you know, they lost like 4,000 viewers or something like that once the last non-Omnath deck got knocked out. And it was seriously like 3 hours of Omnath mirrors after that. It was pretty awful. So, I mean, you know, no, there were definitely some really great competitors and some good matches. Austin Bursevich won, and you know, I think he played really well, but it was just so boring to watch. So I hope we see how good the Rogues deck can actually be, because it is kind of a fun deck to play. I think we're gonna see some Mill for sure, some Gruul, and you know, maybe a couple control decks can come back too.
Yeah, man. All right. Well, I think we ought to wrap up on that. It was nice talking to you, John.
Yeah, nice talking to you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on.
Modern Metacall is a production of CarnockLife.com, where you can find a selection of MTG content, both written and recorded. Looking for deck primers? We've got them. Interested in videos? Try our CKL Play series, where we take the most interesting decks appearing in published results for a spin through MTGO leagues. We've got a team of talented writers specializing in a variety of formats and archetypes. To keep up with Cardknock Life offerings, you can follow us on our Facebook page, facebook.com/CardknockLifePodcast. Thanks is due to ManaTraders.com, MTGCast.com, and TheDiscard.com for their support in making this possible, and thank you for listening, commenting, sharing, and reading Cardknock Life content.